Good morning. Good morning, good morning, Southside. I may never march in the infantry, and on that note, some of the kids can follow Allison out while we won't sing, but I recite a children's song. I may never march in the infantry, ride in the cavalry, shoot the artillery. I may never fly or the enemy, but I'm in the Lord's army, yes, sir. I'm in the Lord's army, yes, sir. I'm in the Lord's army, yes, sir. I may never march in the infantry, ride in the cavalry, shoot the artillery. I may never fly or the enemy, but I'm in the Lord's army. Today there will be several battles taking place. The Bucks are playing the Knicks at 11 a.m. The Bears are playing the Packers at 7:20. I don't think that will be a battle. More like a smashing. And at 1 p.m. today, Jeff is here to perform a wedding. Now, getting married is an entrance into a battle. Sometimes you fight against one another. More often, hopefully, you fight with one another. Every Christian is enrolled in the Lord's army. And it is called a good fight. I want you to look at the last four words of 1 Timothy 1, verses 18. What does your Bible say there? The last four words of verse 18. Fight the good fight. Most translations do have fight the good fight. The NIV, for some strange reason, changes an adjective into an adverb and says fight the battle well. But I looked at 10 English versions, and most of them, with the exception of the newer translation of the NIV, go with fight the good fight, not fight the battle well. Although I can understand the translation, Paul is hoping that Timothy will fight the battle well. But the adverb is not an adverb, it's an adjective. It is to fight the good fight. And this is good in the sense of philosophy and morality. When something is exceedingly beautiful, something is virtuous, something is honorable, something is pleasing to God, this is the kind of fight that this is. Paul could have just said, fight the fight. But what does he say? He says, Timothy, you fight. There is a noble calling on your life. This is the most honorable thing that you can do, is to battle and to make war for the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And so we are in a battle. And it may be that some of you are getting tired in the battle and are to the point where you're considering laying down your weapons. Or perhaps you've felt like you haven't had weapons for a long time. But we are in the Lord's army. And we are called to fight, just like the young man Timothy was called to fight for the gospel and to make war against the flesh. Every Christian is called and is enrolled in the Lord's army. And so we are the soldiers. What are we fighting against? We're fighting against the flesh, against temptation, against sin, against evil. Sometimes we have difficulties because we have to proclaim the truth in the face of opposition. And so here we are marching forward, hunkering down on the defense sometimes, but still we press on proclaiming the truth in the face of opposition. Sometimes soldiers are called to suffer and, if required, to lay down our lives. Oh, Christian, when does the battle end? It doesn't end until death. And that comes in different places for many of us. But the call on our lives is to make war and to fight and to battle until death. Christ has won the victory. But we must battle day by day against all of the wiles of Satan. And the battle, as I mentioned, does not end until death. Many people begin this battle well, but for various reasons, maybe they get tired. Maybe life is really hard. You think about the most difficult things that you're experiencing in your life, the most difficult moments of faith, crises of faith, perhaps a loss, perhaps an illness, perhaps trying to stand firm in the Word of God and encountering opposition in various aspects of your life. Many begin well, but they never finish. And so what I hope that the message today leaves you with, which is entitled, Make War, O Christian, I hope that you'll be left with, after this message, with the ability to keep fighting, using all of the powerful weapons that God supplies you with until the end of the journey, at death until he comes again. And so since we are soldiers in a battle, I've pulled from 1 Timothy 1:18 to 20, five battle commands. It kind of makes sense. That's what comes from the commander, commands. And so I pulled five of them on down. The first is going to make us aware of our assignment that God has given to us. Every Christian is enrolled in the army and has a specific assignment, a specific role. Secondly, after you're aware of that assignment, I want all of us to be armed for battle. But before you can fight, you need to know what you've been assigned to do. So there's a method to the madness. So first, to keep fighting well using God's weapons, we need to be aware of what God has called us to do on this war field, on this battle path. And second, we need to make use of the weapons that God has given us. So we're going to be armed for battle so that we keep fighting. So first command, verse 18. Timothy, my son, I am giving you this command. I want to stop there. When Paul says command, what does he have reference to? Well, he's used command twice in chapter 1. Chapter 1 and verse 5, chapter 1 and verse 3. The command is the same. Paul is just repeating it again. This is your charge, Timothy. Chapter 1, verse 3. As I urged you when I went into Macedonia, stay there in Ephesus, so that you may command certain people not to teach false doctrines any longer, or to devote themselves to myths and endless genealogies. And so when Paul says, again, in chapter 1, verse 18, I am giving you this command, that command is the same. What he said in verse 3 is the same to Timothy, my son. I give you this command. What is your charge? What is your assignment? You are to combat false teaching in Ephesus. Now, Timothy's position is a church leader, and he has a specific role to combat false teaching. How does he do this? In a number of different ways. Timothy is called to preach. He's called to teach. He's called to correct in public and private. People are teaching myths, endless genealogies, speculation. Timothy has to put a stop to that. He's to be an example and a model of godliness. And there are challenges that are associated with Timothy's roles, but they must be met with God's gift. God has called Timothy to a specific role, given him ways to accomplish that role, and equipped him with gifts to be able to do what he's called him to do. Now, there are some difficulties. And so in order for us to battle well, in order for us to fight the good fight, do you remember, some of you probably into wrestling in the 90s, you remember Dwayne The Rock Johnson? He had a famous slogan where he would say, know your role. He said, know your role and shut your mouth. Know your role. And that's the first thing that we must do as a church. If we are soldiers in this battlefield, then we have to know what God has called and assigned us to do. And so if the imagery of the text is an army, if Timothy is a church leader and he's called to combat, he's called to preach and teach, and you say, well, I'm not a church leader. Well, that's okay. Not everybody is supposed to give orders. Some people need to defend. If everybody was giving orders, who would defend? If everybody was defending, who would fly the planes? Someone's got to keep watch. When people get hurt, somebody has to bandage the wounds. There need to be medical personnel. You see all of the different functions that the army needs to be able to function properly as a unit? And so the first is that we need to know our roles. Romans 12, Ephesians talk about the gifts that God has given. Romans 12 says, if your gift is serving, you serve. In the army, you serve. You're called to serve. You use your gift to serve. Your gift is teaching, you teach. If you can support a ministry by giving, giving is a gift in Romans 12. Then you give generously and you use your finances to support ministries, to support mission work. If your gift is leading, then you're called to lead. If your gift is encouraging, then you're called to encourage. And so, oh Christian, I ask you, when you put on Christ in baptism and he called you and he equipped you with a gift, how are you using the gift? How are you serving? How are you teaching? How are you giving? How are you leading? How are you encouraging? We need all of that to be able to function together as God's army. The second battle command also comes in verse 18. It is this: never fight alone. When you're in a war, never fight alone. I looked up a little information about dolphins. When dolphins will encounter predators, what they will do is, they're young dolphins called calves. When they encounter a predator, let's say a shark or some other large fish or some other sea creature, the older dolphins will shift the baby calves into the middle for protection. And then they work as a team to fend off the threats. If it's a shark, they battle the shark in groups and ram the shark with their noses. There have been dolphins that have been known to kill sharks. Christian, never battle, never fight alone. Why do I say that from the text? Paul and Timothy are separated. They're separated by geography. Timothy is in Ephesus. Paul may be in Macedonia, up in northern Greece. He's far, far away. They are separated by geography. But Paul still is intimately aware of the difficulties that Timothy is experiencing. And he knows that this is an extremely difficult place, and Timothy has been called to do extremely difficult things. And if he's there by himself without any encouragement, perhaps he will give up. But Paul can't be there, and so what he does is he encourages him by writing him a letter. He gets creative. He knows the situation, and he doesn't just say, oh, I'm separated. I know what's going on. Well, I hope he survives. I hope he does well. He writes a letter, sends it by someone, and delivers it to Timothy so that he is encouraged to continue fighting. Yes, Timothy, you might be young. You've got a lot coming at you. You've got to combat false teaching. You've got to rebuke people. You've got to preach. You've got to teach. And people are questioning your authority. And Timothy, I just want you to know that I'm thinking about you. I have written this letter. I have taken the time. I know we're separated by some distance, but I need you to know that you need to keep fighting. And so Paul issues him some encouragement. And you see what Paul does? He's separated, but he knows the situation. And then he does what exactly needs to be done to minister to a need. In church, sometimes there are needs in this church that when known, someone might need encouragement. Somebody might be going through some tough, tough situations. And they open the door for the church to come in and to help them. Tony did that last week. He came up and mentioned that he wrestled with anxiety. He opened the door so that we as his church can battle with him. He has his family battling with him. But he opened up the door so that he's not battling this on his own. And so that's what Paul does in verse 18. He uses the language of encouragement and the language of strengthening. He says, Timothy, my son, I am giving you. Now, most translations there will have the word entrust. You don't entrust something to someone unless you think they can guard it and keep it and return it back to you. Now, you might remember last week, Paul talked about how God entrusted the gospel to him. And Paul has a responsibility to preach that gospel. It's the same thing with Timothy. He's saying, Timothy, I am entrusting this to you. I believe that you are capable of doing all that God has called you to do. I believe in you, Timothy. You see what he says? I entrust this task to you. So there's some seriousness to it because he's responsible to God, but there's also some encouragement because Paul believes that Timothy can minister effectively. Come what may, let the battle come. Let the people come. I'm still going to preach, Timothy. You can still teach. You can still correct. You can still serve. You continue to be an example, Timothy. And so he encourages him with the language of entrusting. And then what else does he say? What does he call Timothy? My son. Only two places in 1 Timothy does Paul say that. Once in verse 2, once in verse 18. It's not a coincidence that Paul just happens to say that before issuing this command. Timothy, you are my son. You are to be just like me, and I believe that you can be just like me, just like God called me to preach this gospel. Just as God poured his grace on me and empowered me and strengthened me and qualified me for service. So, Timothy, you're to be just like me. He's to be just like his father. And so Paul encourages and he strengthens Timothy and he ministers to that need pastorally, knowing exactly how to address Timothy so that he can keep ministering faithfully in Ephesus. But sometimes you need a little bit more than human encouragement. Am I right about it? Sometimes you're going through things and a hug is just not enough. Sometimes knowing someone praying for you, it may not be enough sometimes. Sometimes you need some help that only God can give you. And so Paul adds a third thing. After he addresses Timothy and encourages him, reminds him, this is our relationship, you can do this. I entrust this to you. The third battle command. So the first one is to know your role. We have to know what God has assigned us to do, to be willing to use our gifts. The second is never, ever fight alone. Never fight alone. Paul had Timothy. Timothy had Paul. And then Paul adds something else in verse 18. He connects the dots. You see what he says in verse 18? Timothy, my son, I am giving you this command. What does he say next? In keeping with the prophecies once made about you, so that by recalling them, you may fight the good fight or fight the battle well. Now, if it's not enough, Timothy, that I've reminded you about our relationship, and it's not enough that I trust you and I think that you're capable, then think back to all those times where you had divine confirmation about what God has called you to do. There were prophecies, plural, that pointed out Timothy's fitness for the ministry. Paul is saying, do you remember back before I even left you here, how we traveled all around, before we even traveled? There were people in different places at perhaps different times that all said the same thing. Timothy is qualified to minister. This is a man that is going to be used by God. Think about how that would fortify Timothy to know that this is not just something he's been called to do from a human point of view, but he has God's divine stamp of approval that has called him there. That's what Jeff told us before he left. He said, God, even though I don't want to leave, and you can see him, he's here, he keeps coming back. And you know what? That's a testament to the value of his ministry. He's been gone for 3 months, and he's been back 3 or 4 times. That is an encouragement to me to know how meaningful Jeff's ministry has been behind the scenes. That he's still in contact with people, still counseling people, and he's teaching for the first time. And that is a tremendous load, and he's flown back and forth. Jeff, your ministry is an encouragement to me. Your behind-the-scenes work, your care for people, some of the things that nobody ever saw that you did, I became aware of, and I'm still learning. Thank you for using the gifts that God has given to you. You keep coming back, they might want you to stay. But you see how sometimes you got to connect the dots. Sometimes you got to connect the past to the present. Timothy's got to remember what is going to fortify you in your ministry. You've got to understand that God has called you. And when God calls somebody, he equips that person. He gives them all the necessary skills that they need to be able to function properly. Oh, this is too tough. Oh, I'm too young. I can't speak. Oh, I'm fearful. Oh, I'm afraid. Oh, I need courage. Oh, I don't think I can do this. No. Paul says, Timothy, God has called you. There is divine confirmation on your life. You connect the past to the present. You remember all those prophecies. You remember what God said about you. And you continue fighting. And so there are many prophecies that pointed Timothy out as one that would be fit to serve, one that God could use. And so what's a prophet? A prophet is someone that revealed God's truth, that revealed the divine will. And so this was often associated when someone was entrusted with an important leadership role. Prophets would often come into the scene and say, this is the person. This is the person that we need to be sent out on this mission. And then the elders or the prophets would pray and lay their hands over that person. And that person often would receive a gift associated with that laying on of hands to go out and to be equipped for God to use. We hear about this in 1 Timothy 4:14. Flip there real quickly so I can show you. Paul tells Timothy in verse 14, do not neglect your gift, which was given you through prophecy, when the body of elders laid their hands on you. Just showing you there that there's one prophecy. Paul talks about many prophecies. But along with that prophetic gift, or that divine revelation that Timothy was to be the one to serve God, along with that came the gift to do what God had required him to do. Christian, we have gifts today. There are gifts that we need to be used. There are gifts that God has given to us. And how do we know that? Well, people will come up and they will confirm your gift. Once you have 5 or 6 people saying, I really appreciate your service, or the way you did that really ministered to me, then you know that that's a gift that God has given you. You can take that as divine confirmation and use that when you face difficulties in your service to God, in your role, in your assignment. Verse 19, the fourth battle command. Holding on to faith and a good conscience. The fourth battle command that I want to pull out from this passage is to hold your horses. Not in the sense of the way it's used as an idiom. We normally use it as in, hold on, wait a second, be patient. Like, hold your horses, grab an umbrella before you leave because it's raining. I'm not using it in that sense. When I say hold your horses, I'm talking about a car with amazing horsepower. Now, I looked up the American cars that have the most horsepower, and some of you may know cars a lot better than I do, so forgive me. I'm just looking up and relying on information on the internet. You can correct me later, but evidently, according to this website that I looked at, the fastest car made in America was a 2021 Dodge Challenger SRT. 807 horsepower, 0 to 60 in 3.25 seconds. If there's a car faster than that, that's fine, but this car has a lot of power. 807 horsepower, 0 to 60 in under 4 seconds. And, oh, Christian, I want to remind you that there are two weapons more powerful than the horsepower on that car in verse 19, and they must be held on to. What do you need to fight the battle well? What do you need to fight the good fight? You need two powerful horses that will get you through the journey. The first one is called faith. The second one is a good conscience. Now, faith has three aspects. Everett Ferguson talks about how faith engages the intellect, it engages the emotions, and it engages the will. All of these are seen by illustration in the call of Abraham. You remember God called Abram in Genesis 12? He said, "Leave your land. I will bless and make you a nation. Kings of peoples will come from you. I will bless those who bless you. I will curse those who curse you. I will give you land. I will make you into a great people." Faith accepted that truth. Abraham had to say, "I believe that truth. That is true. What God said is true." So he accepted it intellectually, but it also required a surrender of his emotion. He had to trust. Do you trust God in the midst of difficulties? Do you trust him as you go through things and as you minister and as you serve him? When you're in the valley, do you trust him? Do you have faith in him? Do you believe in his promises? Abram didn't doubt it. He surrendered. And he was completely committed. He held on to those promises of God. And there was a third thing associated with faith. Abraham was obedient. Because he believed it was true, because he trusted, he obeyed and he went. Not knowing where he was going, but trusting the one who was leading him. And sometimes in our lives, it will seem like we don't know where we're going. But it's in moments like that in particular that we need to hold on to your horses. Faith, firstly, and a good conscience. The second one, good conscience. What is a good conscience? It's associated with conversion. A good conscience guides behavior. And it helps us know how to be godly by affirming what sound teaching is. Faith and a good conscience are related. Now, good conscience will also be a witness that any behavior that is done with proper motives. And so it will attest that when you do something, why do you do it? Is it because of greed? Is it because of pride? Or is it really because you love God? Is it sincere? This is what a good conscience is for. And Paul says it's important to hold on to both of these. Because without a good conscience, your faith will be shipwrecked. And that's what Paul says in verse 20. Which brings me to my last point, my last battle command in verse 20. Protect the troops. Verse 20. You see the danger of someone that did not hold on to their weapons, that let go of a good conscience, and that shipwrecked their faith. Paul mentions two people that have done this. Among them are Hymenaeus and Alexander, whom I have handed over to Satan to be taught not to blaspheme. Now we know about both of these men because Paul mentions them again in 2 Timothy. Hymenaeus is mentioned in 2 Timothy 2, 17 and 18. He's one of those that are engaging in these godless myths and this godly chatter, and he's saying that the resurrection has already happened and he is destroying the faith of some. Alexander, perhaps, is mentioned in 2 Timothy 4:14. He opposed Paul's message. It may be the same Alexander. Alexander was a common name in Ephesus. It may be a different Alexander. We're not sure. But in 2 Timothy 4:14, there is another Alexander that is known for opposing Paul's message. And so these two men are grouped together as those who have shipwrecked their faith. And Paul equates it with blasphemy. And so in order to protect the church, Paul excommunicates these men. Now, we don't talk about excommunication a lot, and it's frankly hard to do, because you can disfellowship someone, and they can go right up to the church up the street, and they can still worship. This is difficult to do, but in order to protect the church, the leaders have to ensure that people that are willfully dividing the church after they are warned and reprimanded, if they continue to do this, if they continue in their obstinacy, the elders have the right to disfellowship a person. Why? For two reasons. One is to protect the church from being destroyed, because Hymenaeus is destroying the church with false teaching. The second reason is so that hopefully these people, by putting outside of the church, will realize when they're outside of the realm of grace that Satan will be used to teach them and punish them not to blaspheme. Not that he wants them to get back in the church, but that he will be used to teach these people not to be disobedient and hopefully to recover their faith. And so how does this message speak to us today? First, it might invite those who are fighting but are not fighting the good fight to join the winning side. If you're fighting and your fight is a one in which self is served and God is not honored and pleasure is sought, you do have a commander. His name is Satan. He is ruling your life and he is commanding you. A life lived in service of self, where Satan reigns as commander, ends in a horrible loss. The battle you lost against sin, however, was won on the cross. And this is fully illustrated in the empty tomb. Christ is victorious over sin. He has destroyed sin and is victorious over it, and in him the victory is won. Because he has risen from the dead. And now he offers new life to those who come to him in faith and who desire to have a good conscience. To those he offers this, along with the weapons for the battle that Satan continues to wage on the Christian. So it may be that you need to respond today to the good news of the gospel and to join the one that has won the victory and to fight on his side. To Christian warriors who are struggling on the battle, there are a few steps for you, a few suggested steps to take based on this text. One is, recall that we are to know our role and our assignment here at Southside. And I think that might prompt us to think about how we are using the gifts God has given to us to further his kingdom. Could be, if you're struggling, one thing that you might want to do is to attend Bible class on Wednesday night, where we unpack this a bit more. That's what Bible class is for. Sometimes you get struggling. You need a little bit before the next Sunday. We'll come on Wednesday nights, and we'll dive into this. We'll pray together. We'll sing a song together, and we'll unpack this together. Perhaps there's a need for more sound teaching in your life to help you get through the week. Wednesday night, coming on Wednesday night, or having a Bible study elsewhere, attending one virtually, would be a good step to do. Another step about plugging in might be to prayerfully consider having a conversation with the leadership about different ways that you can serve. Perhaps it could be reading scripture. Perhaps it can be taking the children on Wednesday nights. Perhaps it could be serving and filling in one of the gaps in the ministries. Perhaps it could be something you're passionate about that is not happening here yet that you'd like to take on as a ministry. If you have something and a gift that God has given to you, your role is to use that gift. One of the Christian gifts I never saw in Romans 12 and Ephesians is to be a rock, to sit on the sidelines. Every Christian is to be involved. Every Christian has an assignment. Every Christian has a task. And so knowing our role will help us to think about ways that we can plug in. A second step is to open the door for areas in your life where you need help in the battle. Timothy and Paul, they had each other. They had help. One of the best things that you can do when you're overwhelmed with difficulties is to open the door for fellow soldiers to come in and help you and encourage you. That needs to be done on both ends. Sometimes you need to be encouraged. Sometimes you need to give encouragement. But like Paul did to Timothy, he knew the situation. Although he was separated by distance, it didn't prevent him from ministering to that particular individual. How do you respond to the prayer lists that are sent out on a weekly basis? Does it evoke compassion? Does it evoke prayer in us? Perhaps it's time today, if you're overwhelmed or facing difficulties, to open the door and to call for help. There are other soldiers that will help you fight. Lastly, evaluate the most difficult area of your life. When you think about your faith journey and your faith walk, what has been the most difficult time? What has been the most difficult experience lately that you've encountered in your life? It could be that you're facing difficulties as a parent with your children. It could be that you're facing difficulties with a particular sin. It could be that you're facing difficulties in your marriage. and things are kind of spiraling out of control. And Paul would remind us about the proper weapons to use in those situations. Faith and a good conscience. How can we pray for you today to help keep you battling faithfully until the end? Let us do so as we stand and sing the song that has been prepared for us.